Velkommen til Aftenklubben på Nova Podcast.
Husk, at du kan høre dagens aktuelle udsendelse søndag til fredag kl. 21 på Nova.
In response to my mentioning Churchill, he said, you know, there are other figures from Churchill's era who fought against fascism in different ways. And he mentioned Charlie Chaplin. You know, there were these artists who used the power of their art to fight fascism. Their influence was stronger than artillery.
Det her er Aftenklubben på Nova
med Daniel Cesar.
Den 24. februar 2022 blev Ukraine invaderet af Rusland. Siden den dag, der har vi herhjemme kunne se optagelser og billeder af den her krig. Udover det, så kunne man allerede i ugerne efter mærke ringene i vandet fra den her krig i hele Europa. Inden krigen var en måned gammel, der havde FN nemlig opgjort, at flere end 3,3 millioner mennesker var flygtet fra Ukraine til Europa. Ukraines præsident Vladimir Zelensky, som tidligere måske mest var kendt i omverdenen, fordi han oprindeligt var komikeren, der skulle styre et land, blev nu pludselig ansigtet på den her krig. To år efter, i 2024, der er så udkommet en bog, som er den første insiderberetning fra Zelenskys liv under invasionen. Bogen den er skrevet af den internationale journalist Simon Schuster og hedder Invasionen indenfra. Simon har i 4 år fulgt Zelensky, og her i 2024, der har jeg haft mulighed for at møde Simon og tale med ham om, hvorvidt Zelensky egentlig var forberedt på den her krig, og ikke mindst, hvordan det har påvirket ham. Og det er, hvad det skal handle om her. Simon Schuster, you have covered Zelensky for several years, even before he became president. Can you talk a little about when did you start becoming interested in Zelensky?
For me, it starts many years ago. I've been reporting on Russia and Ukraine for about 17 years. Zelensky is not the first Ukrainian president that I have interviewed and spent time with. He is the third. So when he appeared as a major political candidate in 2019, it was quite natural for me to pay attention to him because it looked like he might win.
Simon Schuster er journalist ved Time Magazine. Han blev født i Moskva som søn af en ukrainer. I 1989 flygtede han til USA, hvor han blev journalist for det New York-baserede Time Magazine. Han har i 17 år arbejdet som journalist i Rusland og Ukraine. Han begyndte at dække krigen i 2014, hvor han rejste til Krim, samtidig med at russiske tropper tog kontrol over halvøen. Han har fulgt Zelenskys liv og lederskab fra garderoberne bag scenen til hans comedy shows, til mudret skyttegrav efter Ruslands invasion. Og han er nu ude med den første insiderberetning af den her krig, der hedder Invasionen indenfra. Simon, you have covered Zelensky journalistically more than 4 years, so even before he became the president of Ukraine. Can you talk a bit about your first meeting with him?
It was a lot of fun. I met him in March 2019. He was about 2 or 3 months into his presidential campaign at the time, and I met him backstage of his comedy show. It was a big stage performance with many comedians, actors, dancers, singers, and I went backstage and I was hanging out with them. It was just a very relaxed, fun atmosphere, like a big group of friends, kind of partying between their pieces of the performance and talking about the future. They all understood that this would probably be Zelensky's last major performance before he crossed over into the world of politics.
Vladimir Zelensky er 46 år gammel, uddannet jurist, men startede som skuespiller og komiker. Han lavede stand-up, tv-sketches, og han vandt endda den ukrainske udgave af Vild med Dans. Og i 2019 der blev han Ukraines præsident med det, der kan betegnes som en jordskredssejr. Efter Ruslands invasion af Ukraine, så gik der kort tid, før Zelensky han kunne fortælle, at han var russernes mål nummer 1, mens hans familie var deres mål nummer 2. Og den britiske avis The Times skrev dengang, at russiske lejesoldater havde fået til opgave at dræbe Zelensky.
What kind of actor, what kind of comedian was he?
He was more than a comedian or an actor. He was really he was the head of the most successful TV and movie production studio, I think, in the history of Ukraine. So he made romantic comedies, he made feature films, he made reality TV shows, game shows. I mean, he was really a man of many talents in the entertainment world. So he was not only an actor himself, but he was also a producer, a filmmaker, a businessman. And the kind of comedy he did was, on the stage, I mean, kind of different to what most people in the West think of as comedy. It wasn't really stand-up comedy where you have one comedian on the stage kind of making jokes, this minimalistic approach that is common in the United States. It's much more of an act. It's much more of a show with, again, musical numbers, dancing, performances of various kind of almost acrobatic nature, and sketch acts where they act out scenes, and a lot of political satire. I think his specialty was political satire. He understood and knew politics very well for many years before he went into politics as a politician, because he made fun of all the politicians in Ukraine, all the presidents, all the oligarchs. He knew them because he needed to understand their weaknesses, their weak points, to make fun of them.
So when did the actor slash comedian slash this person who made political satire, when did he begin going over and think he should do something political?
I guess the origins of that idea in his mind, for the most part, had to do with his most famous television show. It's called Servant of the People, where he played the president on TV.
4 år før Zelensky blev Ukraines præsident, der skrev han, instruerede og spillede hovedrollen i tv-serien, der har titlen Folkets Tjener. Den udkom i 2015, og her spillede han en utilfreds gymnasielærer, som efter en video af ham går viralt, bliver Ukraines nye præsident.
And it's a kind of typical political fantasy where a normal guy kind of stumbles into the presidency and turns out to be a lot more honest and effective than all the professional politicians. So this show was running in Ukraine for about 3 years, between 2015 and 2018. And I think it helped Zelensky, his friends, and many Ukrainians, millions of Ukrainians, imagine him in the role of the president. And over time, this kind of ceased to be a joke in their minds, and he and his friends and colleagues would increasingly talk about, hey, maybe you should try this in real life.
Simon, can you recall when did it become serious for Zelensky? When wasn't it just a joke from his point of view that he wanted to become president of Ukraine?
There wasn't a moment. This was an evolution in his thinking. As they began kind of talking about this more seriously and wondering, hey, what would it actually require? They began talking to political consultants, political advisors, to really understand what the process would look like. There were also a series of interesting public opinion polls taken in 2018 that asked Ukrainians who they would like to vote for in the next elections. And the options that were available in that survey included a number of people who were not professional politicians. So there was a rock star, and Zelensky was there. There were some other people who were kind of not politicians, not candidates. And he scored very highly in those opinion polls. I think that also contributed to the thinking in his team and in his mind that, hey, this could actually happen. If we try it, we might win.
And he became president the 20th of May 2019. And I'm curious, before the war began, what kind of president was he?
He was very optimistic. He was very kind of hopeful, I think. His whole campaign centered around the idea that the old political elites that have been in control of Ukraine for so many years, and who seem to just kind of change places every once in a while, but really nothing changes, like a kind of political carousel, that we need to clean these people out. We need new approaches, new faces, new blood, young people to come in. And that is the kind of president that he was. One of the interesting things that he did is, in his political party, which also won the parliamentary elections that year in July 2019 with an enormous victory, he said that only first-time lawmakers would be allowed to serve in the parliament under his party. So no one who had previously been a politician. All new faces. That was his promise. And I think in terms of his policies, the two big promises he made were, number one, to end the war in eastern Ukraine that had then been ongoing for about 5 years in the Donbas region, and number two, to fight corruption. Those were his promises.
You mentioned in your book that he, in the beginning as a president, if I remember it correctly, that he didn't want to speak with people. How was it? He didn't want to speak with politicians who didn't have any humor.
Yeah, I mean, you're simplifying it a little bit. This was a conversation I had with him there during, on the campaign trail when he was running for president, and I pointed out to him that, you know, if you win these elections, your life will get a lot less fun and a lot more boring and complicated. You'll have to go to Brussels and attend all kinds of summits and political meetings with a bunch of boring bureaucrats and technocrats. And he asked me, what, they're not, none of them are any fun? Aren't there any interesting or fun people among them? And I said, I'm not really sure. I don't think so. Maybe not. And his answer was, well, I'll only meet with the fun ones. And the rest of them, we can send professionals to deal with them.
But that was a joke.
He was joking, but he immediately followed up that remark with something quite serious. He said, look, Simon, I don't want to change. I don't want to become a politician. I want to remain the person that my experience has created. I don't want to go through the metamorphosis of turning into a bureaucrat and a technocrat. The people of Ukraine don't want that, and I don't want that. He says, if you lose yourself, if you lose the person that your experience has created, you will sink into the political swamp. And that he meant very seriously. That was not a joke.
The 24th of February 2022 was the day that Russia invaded Ukraine. Do you think Zelensky was prepared for that invasion?
No, he was shocked by the scale of the invasion. He did not expect the Russians to attack the way that they did, with an immediate invasion from three directions, north, east, and south, and bombardment from the air of Ukrainian cities and civilian targets across the country. He didn't expect this kind of invasion. No, that was quite a shock to him, his family, and his government.
Всім добрий вечір. Лідер фракції тут, голова офісу президента тут.
Den her video, hvor man kan se Zelensky stå skulder ved skulder sammen med sine regeringsfolk, blev lagt op den 25. februar. Dagen efter Ruslands invasion af Ukraine. Og for mange mennesker så blev det her det første indtryk, som Zelensky gjorde udad til som en præsident i krigstid.
That video that he posted, what kind of impact do you think that made for the perception of him?
It seems to have had a huge impact because in the last few days, as we have marked the 2-year mark of this invasion, I've seen that video played and replayed so many times. I think it was just the moment when the world saw him for the first time. You know, I, of course, had been following him and his career for years by then, but I think that was the moment when people took notice and said, hey, who is this guy? You know, who is this character?
Yeah.
He comes through as quite a defiant, charismatic figure in that video. Just saying to the Russians, no, I'm not going to run away from you. I'm not scared. I'm staying here and we're going to fight you. He had been saying similar things before, but I think the world saw him in that image, in that new persona of the wartime president for the first time in that video.
I bogen der skriver Simon, at på et tidspunkt der har han en samtale med Zelensky, hvor han nævner, at han ofte, altså Zelensky, bliver sammenlignet med Winston Churchill. Og det var ikke noget, der faldt i god jord hos den ukrainske præsident. Og det spurgte jeg selvfølgelig Simon om, hvordan det kunne være.
It surprised me too. That conversation was actually on the train going back to Kiev from Kherson. And we were talking about Zelensky's place in history, how he saw the historical significance of his role. And I mentioned that people always often compare him to Churchill. I expected that he took this as a big compliment, but he didn't seem at all happy or pleased with that comparison. My understanding is that Churchill, for all of his enormous achievements in saving Europe from the Nazis and leading his country through the war, was generally a defender of the British Empire. Politically, he was, you could say, an imperialist. And Zelensky sees the war in Ukraine, as fundamentally an anti-imperialist war. So a struggle to free Ukraine from the last bonds of the Soviet Empire. And in response to my mentioning Churchill, he said, you know, there are other figures from Churchill's era who fought against fascism in different ways. And he mentioned Charlie Chaplin, the comedian who made fun of Hitler during the Holocaust. And he said, look, you know, there were these artists who used the power of their art to fight fascism. And often, he said, their influence was stronger than artillery. So I think it's a very revealing remark, and it shows the kind of leadership, the kind of weapon that Zelensky is most effective at using. It's the power of the word, communication, showmanship, to push back in the information war against the Russians and try to counter Russian propaganda and Putin's lies that he has used to justify this war. That is where Zelensky is in some ways strongest.
Yeah. Can you talk a little about that? That's something I think a lot of state leaders wouldn't say, that they are more in the spirit of an actor or comedian, which Charlie Chaplin was, which in some ways Zelensky also were before he became a president. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, when you look at the way he has acted, Zelensky, and used his position, can you see that? Can you see that he has been a different leader because of his view on things like this?
Yeah, I think so, you know, because he wages the information war so effectively, and he understands, perhaps especially in the 21st century, in the age of information, the age of the internet, how important it is to keep your message at the forefront, to win people over through what they see on their screens. I mean, we generally experience the war in Ukraine, you know, foreigners, people outside Ukraine, people in Europe and the United States, we see it on the news, on our television screens, and on our phones and our news feeds. And he has a profound understanding of both of these media and how to use them to grab people's attention and to win their support, to make them feel close to this war, that this war is not something far away, something abstract, something some territorial conflict in the ruins of the Soviet Union, to make us all feel a part of it and rooting for him, supporting him. That has proved extremely important for Ukraine's survival, because it is so much smaller and so much weaker militarily than Russia, because its population is so much smaller and so on. It needed the world's support in order to survive this war and to push the Russians back. And Zelensky's abilities as a showman, as a communicator, allowed him to speak not only to foreign leaders, but to the people in those countries, the people who elected those foreign leaders, to convince all of us that Ukraine's war is our war, and we need to support Zelensky and support Ukraine.
For somebody like you, who has been following him in 4 years, I mean, how close did you get to him? Was there any part of him as a person, as a leader, where you thought, okay, I couldn't get access to that part of him?
Yeah, of course. Human beings are very complicated. You never fully understand anyone. I'm not sure I fully understand myself. you know, people are full of contradictions and complexities, and I try in the book to paint as many of those complexities as I can, to really paint him as a human, not some kind of icon or a superhero, but as a man, as a person. But there are always many layers to a personality, and I can by no means say that I understood him completely. There are always, you know, questions that remain in my mind. You know, I could have talked to him for many hours more, but his time is limited, and I needed to finish the book.
But was there a question that you didn't get an answer on? Was there anything while writing this book, was there any question that you were left with that you thought, oh, I would have loved to get the answer to that?
I do end the book on a question that remains open in my mind. I did have a chance to talk to Zelensky about it. The question is, you know, what kind of leader will he be if Ukraine wins this war, as I hope, certainly hope it does, what will be the transition back to a normal European democracy from a state of wartime leadership and martial law? How difficult will it be for him to transition back to a situation where there are television channels constantly criticizing him and there are opposition parties attacking him and running elections? What will that transition be like for Ukraine and for him as a leader? That is an open question historically. I did talk to Zelensky about that, and he expressed a lot of clarity and confidence in saying, look, it's very simple, Simon. We win the war, we lift martial law, and we go back to democracy as normal. But I think he, in some ways, underestimates just how difficult that transition will be. And honestly, from what I know of him, I don't know how he will handle it, how easy it will be for him to go back to the kind of normal functions of a democracy, especially in a situation where, you know, the economy will be in a very difficult state, to put it mildly. The country will need massive reconstruction. Military veterans will need a great deal of support. All of these are difficult political challenges. And being able to switch from a wartime leader to a post-war leader is yet another transformation that he will have to undergo in his life. He has demonstrated an ability to change into new personas very effectively and flexibly. So I think he is prepared, and I do have hope that he'll be able to manage that transition. But it's a difficult one, and I wonder what that will look like.
When was the last time you spoke with him?
I spoke to him last in October of 2023. This was after the book was finished. We took a trip on his train again down to Odessa.
Okay, and my question is then, by the time the time span you have got to know him, how has it changed him? How has it changed an all kind of ordinary man, like an actor, a producer, this media person, to then become the leader, the president, and then into a time of war? How has that affected him?
I'd say two things. One is he's much tougher, much more disciplined and strict with himself and with his team. It's not the kind of easygoing, somewhat chaotic group of comedians that I met in 2019. It's now a very tough work environment, and he's very demanding of himself and of the people around him. There's a kind of hardness and a steeliness to him that did not exist before. But also the other change, I think, and I talked to him about this, I asked him once, you know, do you feel you've aged or changed, right? And he said, of course, I feel like I've gotten much older because of the horrors that he sees every day, the images, and the not just the images, but he comes face to face with the horrific crimes and the suffering that the Russian invasion has caused day in and day out. And that pain is really carved into his face. You could see the changes. In the book, I include two photos, one 2 months before he became president and one 2 months after the full-scale invasion. There's a difference there of about 3 years, but it looks like he's aged 10 to 15 years. And you see the grief in his face, the suffering, the pain that he has witnessed and experienced. And of course, that follows him around. It's like a heaviness on his shoulders that is hard to miss. That definitely was not there in 2019.
Den her bog, som Simon han har skrevet, den hedder Invasionen indenfra, fra komiker til landsfader. Og med det i mente, Simon Schuster, it was a pleasure talking with you and meeting you, and I hope you have a great flight home.
Thank you, I hope so.
Misser du noget i denne eller en tidligere udsendelse? Hop ind på radioplay.dk, så kan du høre alle udsendelser som podcast.
Det her er Aftenklubben på Nova.